Excuse me.
Yeah?
One of you would help me, please. I want to buy a gramophone.
A what?
A gramophone.
Gramophone.
A gramophone.
I don't think we've got any gramophones here, Grandad.
What's that?
That's a Trio automatic cut direct drive turntable, unless I'm very much mistaken.
And what's the difference between that and a gramophone?
Well, about 30 years in a plastic cupboard, are you, Chief?
Well, I'd like one of these, please.
You sure?
Yes, please.
All right.
This is going to be good.
Right, well, as you can see, it's got all the speeds. It's got 33 and 45.
Yes, what do I do with my old 78s?
What do you say?
Nothing.
You say, what about my old 78s, didn't you?
No, I didn't, honestly, no.
All right. So, you got your deck.
Right.
Do you want a Dolby with it?
Yes, please.
You only get Dolby's with tape recorders, Chief, all right? Do you want an amp?
No, I won't.
You won't hear anything, Grandad, without an amp, I'm afraid.
Oh, so, of course, yes, I want an amp.
You want yes, an amp.
Yes,
all right, what sort of output are you looking for?
What sort have you got?
No clues.
About medium?
How many watts exactly?
Oh, I should think about three. No, 2,000. 500?
30? Yeah. 30. So you know all about it now, don't you? You want a 30 watt amp?
A 30 watt amp.
Do you want speakers?
Yes.
Do you want rumble filters?
Yes.
Do you want a bag on your head?
Yes.
Now, the Graphophone was a phonograph made by the Columbia Phonograph Company under one of its many corporate identities. There were graphophones that played both cylinders and some that played 78 RPM records. A graphonola was an internal horn phonograph made by the Columbia Company as well that played 78 RPM records. Columbia began selling disc records and phonographs in addition to the cylinder systems in 1901, preceded only by their toy graphophone in 1899, which used small vertically cut records for a decade. Columbia competed with both the Edison Phonograph Company cylinders and the Victor Talking Machine Company disc records, and they were one of the top three names in an American recorded sound. The firm that introduced the internal horn graphonola, they did it to compete with the extremely popular Victrola, sold by their rival, Victor Talking Machine. Welcome to Dead Wax 78s. This is your host, Sean, and yeah, we're going to talk about all that old-timey graphophone, gramophone. This episode, we're going to talk about the graphonola. The Columbia Graphonola is a brand of early 20th century phonograph made by Columbia Graphophone Company, and it was introduced in 1907. Graphonolas, like I said, are the internal horn alternatives to the same company's external horn disc graphophones. Until late 1925, all record players reproduced sound by purely mechanical means and relied on a so-called amplifying horn to effectively couple the vibrations of the stylus and diaphragm to the space occupied by the listeners. And in 1906, the Victor Talking Machine Company, Columbia's arch competitor, introduced a line of models in which the horn and other hardware were concealed within the cabinet. It made it look like fine furniture rather than a mechanical device. They named the new style a Victrola. It quickly proved to be a very popular and successful model. Other makers adopting the distinctive suffix introduced their own Ola internal horn machines, such as Edison's Amberolas and Columbia's Graphonolas. They were soon outselling the external horn models. The American Graphophone Company, with factories in Bridgeport, Connecticut, was the manufacturing arm of the enterprise, and the Columbia Phonograph Company was the sales and distribution arm. The Columbia Phonograph Company, General, was a sort of holding company. There were other corporate incarnations, but enthusiasts don't pay much attention to such things and just lump everything together as a Columbia. In 1921, facing bankruptcy, Columbia was taken over by its British branch. Here's side one. Just like a rainbow, the Columbians on Columbia. By 1902, it was becoming apparent to insiders in the phonograph trade that the long-term prognosis of the cylinder phonograph was not healthy. Berliner's gramophone, which had evolved into the Victor talking machine, was stealing sales from the cylinder machines as the flat disc records became louder and more lifelike. A development particularly troublesome to Columbia in urban areas where it was dominant. Columbia had tested the waters with a toy graphophone in 1899, but it wasn't until sometime in 1902 that they had jumped into the market in a major way. They acquired some patents, originally belonging to Joseph Jones, a former Berliner employee. And these patents and the reputation of Columbia's legal department were sufficient to eventually intimidate Victor into a cross-licensing agreement. The first disc graphophones, the AH and the AK, were introduced in 1902 and 1903. Most cylinder graphophones play a record 2 minutes in length. Shortly after Edison introduced his improved Gold Mole records, Columbia came out with a molded black wax record of their own. These records do not have the quality of the Edison product and are especially susceptible to mildew, a defect that became embarrassingly apparent even when the record was new. And by 1908, when Edison introduced his first 4-minute records, Columbia was only marginally participating in the cylinder trade. A few late cylinder graphophones were equipped with a switch and a reduction gear to accommodate 4-minute records, and a universal stylus midway between 2 and 4 minute cut was fitted to a Columbia reproducer. And in 1908, Columbia committed to buy the entire production of the Indestructible Record Company of Albany, New York, a maker of celluloid cylinders. And these were marketed as the Columbia Indestructible Records. Here's side two. Kiss Me, Honeydew, Harry C. Brown on Columbia.
When the cotton fields have withered and the corn am in the ground, and the cabin of his diner disposed always hanging around, when the twilight am all faded and the sun am gone to rest, then I serenade the lady I love best. Dinah, the moon is shining, all you is soon am shining. Mom is soon around, you ain't be quiet and kiss me, honey. There's a chocolate covered lady snuggling close up by my side, with her head upon my shoulder while I hold her silly hand. Then I hear my baby whisper to her man, Dinah, the moon is shining, all your lips and hiding.
Unlike Edison, who manufactured a relatively limited range of models, Columbia produced a vast array of machines covering every available niche in the market. The graphinola, that internal horn disc graphophone, was introduced, like I said, in 1907, around a year after Victor made the first Victrola. Two models were available, a portable table model and a bigger stationary floor model, offering a limited mobility through application of casters. The most notable table models included the Graphinola Favorite, introduced in 1911, and the Graphinola Savoy, introduced in 1915. The most notable floor models included a Graphinola Symphony Grand, and it was introduced in 1907, and the Graphinola Regent, introduced in 1909. A Columbia Mignon, introduced in 1910, and the Graphinola Princess, introduced in 1911. Columbia Colonial, that came around in 1913. There were various period graphanolas introduced in 1917. In order to cater to increasingly prosperous clients, Columbia Phonograph Company began to manufacture a series of ornate, limited edition period machines. These were highly priced, some as high as like $2,100, specially ordered, of course, which provided customers with options to choose styles which matched their interior decor. So, from around 1898 until 1922, the U.S. parent Columbia Company managed a U.K. subsidiary, the Columbia Graphophone Manufacturing Company. Its headquarters and studios were established in Victorian warehouses on Clerkenwell Road shortly before the First World War. And the buildings were a key location in the development of the British recording industry until about 1930. In 1917, the Columbia Graphophone Company was registered as a British company, with the shares being held by the American firm. A general market downturn in 1921 affected the whole entertainment industry. Profits turned to losses, and in late 1922, the creditors of the U.S. parent company filed a petition for involuntary bankruptcy. So Columbia went into receivership. Seeking to raise cash, Columbia sold the British branch in December 1922 to a group of investors led by Columbia's general manager in Britain, the American-born Louis Sterling. Here's side three. From 1923, Marion Harris, Who's Sorry Now on Brunswick.
Now you know it doesn't pay to play with fate. you have learned your lesson just a bit too late. I'm glad that you're sorry now.
Ooh, I gotta apologize for that. Anyway, on February 25, 1925, Columbia began recording with the Electric Recording Process license from Aviva Tonal. A record set a benchmark in tone and clarity unequaled on commercial discs during the 78 RPM era. The first electrical recordings were made by Art Gillam, the whispering pianist, in a secret agreement with Victor. Electrical technology was kept secret to avoid hurting sales of acoustic records. Louis Sterling, managing director of the Columbia Graphophone Company, had been the moving force behind bringing Western Electric's recording process and the British takeover. Originally from New York, Sterling became chairman of the Columbia New York from 1925 until 1931 and oversaw stability and success. We've talked about Louis Sterling before, and he's been up to some shenanigans. At first, like nearly all the other record players, all graphonolas were driven by a spring motor that the user had to wind up with a crank before playing a record or two. But by 1915, Columbia began to introduce electric motor-driven models. A majority of urban areas had been wired to the electrical grid. The electrified graphonolas supported both alternating and direct current from 110 to 220 volts. Electrified graphonolas never really gained the popularity enjoyed by the spring motor-driven versions due to the substantially higher prices and a lack of electrical services in rural areas. Here's side four. When Papa Papered the Parlor. Billy Williams, Columbia, UK, 1910.
Father papered the parlor, but he'd no right to do so. Our parlor wanted papering, and past it was waste to call the paper hangers in, and so he made some paste. He got some rolls of paper, a ladder and a brush, and with me mother's nightgown on at it, he made a rush. When father papered the parlor, you couldn't see papa paste. Dabbing it here and dabbing it there, there was paste and paper everywhere. Mother was stuck to the ceiling and the kids were stuck to the floor. You never saw such a bloomin' family so stuck up before. Dum da dum da da da. What do you think of poor old father? Diddly diddy dido. You never saw such a bloomin' family so stuck up before. La da dum da 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 da. That's the father. Soon Dad fell down the stairs and dropped the paper hanger's can on little sister Mary sitting there with her young man. The paste stuck them together as we thought would be for life. We had to fetch the parson in and make the man and wife. When father papered the parlor, you couldn't see papa paste. Dabbing it here and dabbing it there, there was paste and paper everywhere. Mother was stuck to the ceiling and the kids were stuck to the floor. You never saw such a bloomin' family so stuck up before. Father papered the parlor, you couldn't see papa paste. Dabbing it here. There was paste all over him. I say all over him. Oh la da dum di diddly di di. We're never going to move away from that house anymore. The father's gone and stuck the chairs and the tables to the floor. We can't find our piano, though it's broad and rather tall. We think that it's behind the paper passed up on the wall. When father papered the parlor, you couldn't see papa paste. Dabbing it here and dabbing it there, there was paste and paper everywhere. Mother was stuck to the ceiling and the kids were stuck to the floor. You never saw such a bloomin' family so stuck up before. Come on. form a set of lances, form top and bottom lines, ladies in the center, gents in the center, advance, come on mother, don't stand there all night, we want to get the set over. Oh dear old mother, come on, give me the kiss, you won't, all right, I'll go home to the wife.
Columbia had developed a set of records employing what they had called the phono-vocal method, which was intended as a self-instructional kit in the art of singing. The Graphonola in the Classroom is a book written by the Columbia Graphophone Company in 1920. It's a fascinating glimpse into the early days of educational technology and provides a valuable insight into how teachers can use technology to improve student learning. The book covers a wide range of topics, including the history of the phonograph, the benefits of using it in the classroom, and practical tips for incorporating it into the lesson plan. The book also includes a selection of songs and speeches that can be played on a, you guessed it, graphonola. The record industry obviously stood to gain from investing in children and teachers, and starting in the 1920s, it advertised its product in the US and UK music press. It also sought, at least on one occasion, to input teachers to endorse its new product. This same music press also reprimanded teachers for not taking advantage of the opportunities afforded by the phonograph, and suggested that they only had themselves to blame if the public were only interested in the infernal noise of jazz. Thank you for listening. This has been Dead Wax 78s. I'm Sean, and you know what? I will catch you on the flip side.